take us deeper so that we grow to experience the heart of God's law, and we grow in love, and we grow closer to God and grow in love for others as well. And it's interesting to me when you're talking about growing in a love for God, because Christ has come to help us understand who God is. We grow to love God, and then we grow to love others. What's the first commandment that Jesus begins with? He goes to the sixth. He deals first with the commandment against murder. Now, you probably heard the story about the little boy going through the Ten Commandments with his dad. And the little boy said, "Well, Dad, in God's commandments, you know, there's one for kids honoring their parents, you know, and there's one for moms and dads being faithful to each other. Don't commit adultery. What about for brothers and sisters? You know, what's the commandment?" You know, apparently he was having trouble with his sibling. And his dad waited a moment and thought and said, "Well, yeah, it's the sixth commandment. You shall not kill. You shall not murder." But, you know, in the Old Testament, there were at least 8 different words for kill. I believe this translation is right for this Old Testament word of kill. Razak is the word here. Thou shalt not murder. What Jesus uses here, and what it refers to, of course, is the unlawful killing or taking of a human life. That's the ultimate worst case scenario. That's what it really means. See, on the surface level, obviously that refers to any taking of an innocent life, the deliberate killing of an enemy. It applies to murder in cold blood, of course. It applies to manslaughter, negligent homicide, any unlawful killing of a human life. But why does Jesus, in this sermon about Christian character of a disciple, begin with murder? Well, I believe it's because when you look at the extreme case of this commandment and what it covers, dealing with the worst case that could happen, that is the physical taking of someone made in God's image, taking their life physically. That's what it's dealing with. It's dealing with that worst action that you could ultimately do that goes against loving God and loving others. And that's taking the physical life of someone. The sixth commandment deals with the unlawful killing and taking of any human being made in the image of God that are therefore valuable in His sight. But here's the thing. Jesus wants us as Christian disciples, He wants us to go deeper than that, doesn't He? He wants to show how God can take what is the worst case scenario and turn it into the best case scenario, because this commandment helps us to see the depths of God's love, for we love Him, but we love who He's made in His image. And we can understand that heart of God and be transformed to do good and to love others when we really understand what this commandment's all about. So He wants to take the worst case scenario and turn it into the best for those that He lives within through His Spirit. Those that are His true Christians. Now, we as Christians, obviously, I wouldn't think a lot, you know, we're going to have a problem with going and taking somebody's physical life. So if we just wanted to say, hey, it's just about don't go physically murder someone, we might as well just close up our Bibles and pack up and go home. Most people, right? But it's much deeper than that. Jesus says, "You've heard it said," meaning this is what the Pharisees taught. And essentially they kind of were saying with all these commandments, just here's what you got to do. You know, don't avoid these things. Don't commit murder in this case. Don't actually kill someone. You haven't actually physically taken a life. You're doing what you need to do. Now move on to other things. You're okay. But Jesus says, "I tell you, anger in the eyes of God can be a murder in the heart." Can turn into that. In other words, the Old Testament, of course, teaches the physical taking of human life is wrong. That unlawful killing of someone in God's image, that's the worst case scenario. Of course, we have to understand that, and we have to uphold what God has said. But do we understand the depths of this? He's saying the interpretation you've been giving, you're only thinking about that worst case surface level idea. You're only scratching the surface of what God intended you to understand and learn about Him through this command. His character, His heart of love, His love, and that love He wants us to have for others that flows from Him. What He wants us to know about growing in love for Him and others and who He really is. You're only scratching the surface of that if you think about it that way. What does God really expect? What can He do in our lives as He lives in and through us when we really know what His law means? Jesus came not to do away with it, the law, but to fulfill it. And Jesus says, I've come to take you beneath the surface in your understanding and experience of God in this commandment. I want you to see that the Lord, myself and God, through your right understanding of that law, can take the worst thing this commandment deals with, taking human life, and help us to know the core of His heart, God's heart, the center of His heart, His desire for us, so He can change us and help us do what's good and best for those that are around us. See, this commandment shows you something amazing about God's love, about His love for people, His standards, His desire for our hearts, our souls, our relationships, for those around us. Jesus says, even if you get angry, and of course, we all say we struggle with anger at different times, don't we? And certainly anger can be a godly thing. Ephesians says, in your anger, don't sin. Ephesians 4. But we all know how quickly anger can move to other things, can it, in our hearts. He's saying, you let it go, and you don't deal with it. If in your flesh you let that feeling and emotion towards other people go unchecked, you hold it in, you don't deal with it, it boils. It burns. It can become seething. As one man said, become a furious attitude that turns into abusive speech and hurt towards other people that are around you, made in the image of God, most of all, certainly, but everybody, but Christians, right? It can turn quickly into bitterness, this emotion of anger. An attitude become very rotten towards others, and you don't want to do anything good towards them. You call them fools even. You say things, maybe not to their face, but you essentially are saying they're foolish and you're putting them down. He's saying you could be in danger of the fire of hell. The point is, the commandment covers much greater, a vast range of sins that could lead up to the worst thing of taking life physically. The commandment represents the character of God, of His love, and His desire for us loving Him and loving others. And so the judgment is not in the court of human court, but God's court Himself. And this doesn't mean that if we ever struggle with anger, of course we do as Christians at times, that we've ever had a grudge or held on bitterness, that we're going to hell. No, but that a person needs to beware of the fact that if they're living in that lifestyle, they could be in danger of it. They could be in danger. God wants to deal with our hearts. We don't assume and want others to assume that because they haven't physically taken a life, hey, I'm okay with God. This is what you get with a lot of people when you do evangelism. I've done through the years. Well, you know, why should God let you into heaven? I've kept the commandments. They don't know. They can't even name them. But if they named a few, they'd be thinking, well, I haven't actually physically murdered somebody. I haven't physically cheated on my wife. I'm okay. We've got to understand that's not right. That's not what God intended. That's not the full depth of it. It means God is not just concerned with our outward actions. He's just as concerned with murderous hearts and things that lead to what we'd say is a murderous attitude towards others and murderous hearts that result in murderous actions that may not be physically taking somebody's life, but tearing them down and what we say about them or how we act towards them or that we'll do nothing to help them. We separate ourselves from them. It's not what God desires for us in growing to be like Him as a disciple, to love God and to love others. I like what John Stott said. He said, anger and insults are ugly symptoms of the desire to get rid of somebody who stands in our way. And that certainly can be the case at times, can't it? Like I read this story, the guy said, I haven't killed anybody, but I've read a whole lot of obituaries with glee. And sometimes people can be like that, sadly. But Jesus is saying God's commandments flow from a holy God who wants us to love from the heart. Grow to love Him from the heart. Grow to love others from the heart. And the moral commands flesh what that looks like. But we're not meant to just think about them on the surface, like what we see in the water, and we don't want to go down and see what's in the depths of the water. There's so much there. 1 John says, how can you say you love God you can't see, and you don't love your brother that you do see? Jesus wants us to see this sixth commandment probes our heart to show us God's intent for us is to grow to love Him and others, not letting anything, including what's in our hearts, be motivated by anything but love. He wants us to grow into where we desire to live for the Lord and from our hearts show love for God and others. And that's why this commandment not only concerns the worst case, but everything that might lead up to it, physically taking a life. Certainly it deals with violence, bodily injury, and not concerned for our own health. Everything that can lead up to that, reckless driving. There's a whole host of things. But it also deals, as Jesus points out here, with our emotions. Dealing with our bitterness and where anger can develop, how it can grow. What God forbids is everything that harms the body and threatens the well-being of ourself or injures ourself or others. But God not only cares about actions, He cares about our attitudes. And that's why when you look deeper, you see it deals with our hearts. That's why Jesus says what He says about anger. It condemns, it deals with, wants us to look at and check our hearts. Anger that goes uncontrolled, unchecked, growing into bitterness, resulting in envy, sometimes combining with envy, resentment, can turn into other things, in a bitterness towards others, and essentially a hatred. Because hatred is not just when we want to do things to hurt people, it's when we don't want to do anything to help them. It can be indifference too. And that's what can grow in our hearts if we're not careful. And it can turn into words that tear people down, like gossip, not being truthful, or talking to the wrong person about it, or slander, saying things that specifically tear down people. This is the heart of the sixth commandment Jesus points out. If we let feelings go unchecked, we can grow and develop a murder in our hearts, our attitudes towards others. And we might not physically hurt them, but we'll have no love for them. And then we may say things that are very destructive towards them. And we'll look down on them. We'll tend to want to condemn and criticize from our hearts, from our pride. And instead of trying to say what's encouraging and what will help them and build them up, we won't have positive things and God's love and grace to help them. It will be flowing from a bitterness in our hearts. Like Jesus said, from the abundance of your heart, your mouth speaks. And this is what can happen. See, we as Christians, we ought to know that better than anyone, what can happen within us, in our hearts. See, Jesus talks about two different things that you might say here that flow from this bitterness, this anger that turns into bitterness and resentment, etc. If you call someone raka, that's literally, it means empty-headed. It's a focus on their head, on their lack of thinking that, you know, this person's dumb. They're empty-headed. It'd be like calling someone a blockhead or a jerk or a nitwit. It's focused on the head, raka. Now, the term fool goes even farther because it's a Greek word. The Greek word is moros here. We get the word moron from it. It's focused on their heart. It's saying that really it's the idea of they're doing it over and over and over. They're more, like moros, moron, more. They're consistently idiotic. It's a deeper insult, this word here, raka, and then fool. And sometimes, you know, we don't realize how we get this attitude when we kind of look down on others and we want to kind of label them or think they don't really know what they're doing. We think that because they've done something wrong the one time, then they do that all the time. And we have to be careful where our hearts will go in hurting those that are made in the image of God. You know, we talk about identity theft, this thing, this concept that's grown over the last 20 years, 15 years. Well, there can be a spiritual identity theft in a way when we don't realize it flows from our hearts. If we don't deal with our anger, we don't deal with those emotions. Over time, we can try to essentially assassinate people and take away their identity and their reputation in the eyes of other people through what we say about them, and in a way, murder them spiritually or from the heart. Ken Hughes said, Jesus here condemns angry contempt and all its cousins, animosity, malice, hostility, malevolence, wrath. Hugh said that Jesus is not suggesting a ladder of offenses that result in progressively sterner judgments, like anger gets a minor judgment, then raka, a stiffer penalty, and then fool, if you say that, you're in danger of hell. No, he's not saying progressively here's what happens. He's simply multiplying examples, Jesus is, to make his point. And the point is, this type of unchecked heart disease could mean a person's in danger of the fire of hell. Are they really right with God if they want to live on like that and not grow in love for God and grow in love for others. We all struggle, so don't misunderstand me. We all struggle at times, don't we, with this emotion. We struggle with saying things that are wrong, but overall, the desire of our heart, if we're Christians, is to show God's love and to love others. We don't want this to happen in our hearts. We don't want that to grow. The point is that murderous actions are the worst kind, or the words that destroys a person's reputation, angry words that flow, that destroy a family or put people down, they're flowing from the heart that doesn't have a love for God, or is something's going wrong there and it's affecting their love for others. And so this is what's flowing out of it. And if it's not dealt with, then more and more, there's the danger there. Turning to Christ, turning to Him, the only one that can change our hearts, is the only answer. Anger, someone said, tends to be like a gushing spring that quickly floods the surrounding, unless there's a clear channel through which it is to be flow through. Anger can just explode, can't it? It just gushes out. And only Christ can change our hearts so that anger can be done and used in the right way. The point is, the sixth commandment points us to the holy God who created people in His image, who were valuable to Him, enough that He sent His Son to set them free from sin and be redeemed and renewed in His image. God desires a people who are growing to love Him and others from the heart, that what's in the inside will be transformed so it shows up in love and Christ-likeness on the outside. And this is one key area. I love what Joel Beakey said in a commentary. He said, Christ's model of love is so important because the devil is unceasing in his attempt to kill love in our hearts and lives. He might do it slowly, but he'll try to do that. We might get hurt by somebody in our family or our church. I'm not saying we're going to make everything right. You know, Romans 12 says, make peace with as much as it's possible on your part. But we have to be careful about our hearts, don't we? That's the key, isn't it? That's the kicker. But we can be, you know, hurt by somebody, and we're not careful, something builds inside of us. Or maybe somebody in the church does something that offends us, and we separate. Or we don't really want to spend time with them, or we kind of build walls. And in our hearts, we have to be careful what's happening inside. We can become insensitive. We can become kind of callous instead of broken and loving and soft and Christ-like. See, anger can be a godly thing, yes. But, you know, for Jesus, we know He was perfect and He had righteous indignation. But remember, Jesus' anger was always others-focused, what was wrong and being done to others. It was never self-centered. It's Christ-like love, godly love, righteous indignation. Him working through us as we're depending on Him in humility, He can help us to grow to have that other-centered emotion. But we got to be really careful because ours tends to go south really quickly and turn into other things and be very much about how I've been wronged and I'm not going to live. I don't have to put up with this in my family, or I don't have to put up with this in this person. I don't have to deal with this. This is wrong. I deserve better than this. We have to always be careful about that because it becomes very quickly self-centered, focused on really a lot of times minor issues in the big scheme of things. And we get about, what are my rights? And I'm going to get back. You know, this is not right. That person doesn't deserve, I deserve better than this. And we don't grow in love. And we don't grow in Christ-likeness. So we don't deal with our hearts and where it can all go. Anger is like a check engine light on your car. And the problem is, like I know I've been many times through the years, it's easy to just woe on with that check engine light, isn't it? It's like, car's driving fine. Tires have air. Crank's up. There's a light. Maybe the light's just electrical. You know, that's what I always say. And then you get a repair bill. You know, of what was really going on. But I'm just saying, emotions are like that. They're meant to point us to what's beneath the bonnet. They're a warning light. So God wants us to see now what's going on. Am I expecting things that I shouldn't? Am I acting selfishly? Maybe there is sin that's been done towards me and I've got to deal with it, but I can't just stay. And this is why Jesus says later on, what does he say? If you're at worship and you find your brother has done something against you or there's something wrong there, you've got to go and try to deal with it, then come back to worship. Now, it's just a general principle that are we going to let things go on, you know, or are we going to deal with them when we feel that emotion? We're going to say, God, help me to see. Maybe it's just my own selfishness. Maybe I'm just expecting things I shouldn't. Maybe there are issues that need to be resolved deep down. But help me to see. You know, they're still fine bombs. I read about this a while back from World War II, still show up in Europe in different places. And they'll turn up and blow up in construction sites left over from the war. All those years. And somebody said unexpected bombs become more dangerous actually with time. The corrosion inside the weapon becomes more unstable and the detonator gets exposed and they blow. And this is the way our hearts can be. That unresolved anger it's like the corrosion. It turns into sin. Over time, eventually it eats away at us. It hurts us. It hurts other people, but it hurts us just as bad. You know, you got some people I always like to say, you know, you got the ones that we deal with anger differently, don't we? And neither one of these ways there's a godly right way to deal with it, the biblical way. But you've got your skunks. I know we don't have skunks over here, but I always like to say the skunks, you know, they spew nasty stuff. And you got your spewers, you know, they're gonna let everything out, you know, and some people are like that. God wants us to deal with it, but in the right way, not blowing up on everybody. Like Tommy Nelson, he said, if you explode on someone, you can't just keep saying, well, I'm sorry, and forget about it and move on. Because when you go off on your mate or child, he said, it's like you're pulling an emotional, spiritual grenade, and the shrapnel flies, and there's scar tissue, and you might go on and say, hey, I'm fine, but they're hurt. This is what spewers do. We got to ask ourselves, is that what I tend to do? Just let it out and I don't go to God about it. I don't really deal with it the right way with other people. Am I a skunk? Am I a spewer when it comes to emotions? Thomas Jefferson, this guy, he said, when you're angry, count to 10. When you're really angry, count to 100. We gotta take the time. Say, God, help me to really think about this. The Proverbs talk about this over and over. How God's wisdom is that we have a calmness and we don't react. So we can grow in love. Then there's the turtles, you know. You got the skunks and then you got the turtles when it comes to dealing with emotions and anger. They just want to hide under their shell, you know. They tend to be leakers, you know. The anger doesn't come out explosively, but it leaks out in just little ways. But it's hurtful ways, poisonous ways in what they say about people. They don't deal with it. They just push it down, hide it under the shell, and then eventually they're kind of like turtles turn into volcanoes, you know. And they erupt. And they blow. All of a sudden, think everything's fine. And then, you know, or they, like I said, they leak out all this stuff and what they say about people. You know, just why? Because the heart hadn't been dealt with. That's why Jesus says what it can lead to. This is not just about this commandment, not taking a person's physical life. It's everything that leads up to it. He's saying, I say to you, you've heard, don't commit murder. But I say to you, if you're angry at your brother, you're in danger of the fires of hell. Why? Because of what that emotion can turn to in selfishness and resentment and bitterness. And we don't deal with it and where it can go. So we've got to ask the Lord to help us to see what's in our hearts regularly. Why are we feeling the way that we're feeling? What's underneath the bonnet? To deal with it and see the parts that are there, the selfishness that's there, and maybe we need to go and deal with it with somebody. But we have to work it out in the right way. We have to go in love. We can't go in explosive anger. But we can't ignore it. That's the thing. When anger is not dealt with love and seeking reconciliation in the right way, with communication in relationships, it'll result in the opposite of what we desire. It's only as we come in the right way in humility that we'll grow. As James says, those who are quick to anger and slow to listen, they don't live and grow in the righteousness that God desires. So we got to go in the right attitude Like what Beakey said again, he said, because we've allowed the enemy to kill love in our lives, we can be full of pain and poison. We can isolate ourselves from others. We can build up walls. We can become more insensitive to other people and not grow in love. And let's be honest about this. If we're willing as Christians to know, we know that if we don't deal with our hearts, it's going to turn into something worse. And we're willing to go on like that and not deal with the problems. And we continue on knowing where that will lead and let that anger boil in us. And maybe even when we're sitting, you know, next to somebody at church. I'm not saying that's true here. But whatever it is, we just let it go on and we ignore the check engine light, knowing where it could lead to. Then if that's our desire and that's the way that's our stance, then are we really growing in godly love? Are we going to do anything to help the person if we're frustrated and we won't deal with it? No. That's the whole point. If we're not doing it, the commandment is not just about avoiding the negative, whether it's murder or tearing somebody down. It's about growing in the positive, growing to love God, and that love being shown to others. And if we're letting all of this in us be pushed down, and we can all struggle with it, but if we're not going to deal with it, we're not growing in a love for that particular person. Because we won't do it. We won't do anything about the negative part. We know it could lead to something where we would actually tear them down. Then how in the world do we think we'd do anything good and out of love for them? So we have to deal with our hearts. Jesus said, out of the abundance of your heart, your mouth speaks. He wants us to see what's happening in our hearts and where it can go to. And this matters to God as we close here because of the what. Number one, if you want to write down a few things, God cares about what these sins of the heart represent. Bitterness, resentment, envy, hatred, they're representing a lack of love for others. God sees our hearts. He sees where this can all lead to. And so because of the what, that's why it matters. How about because of the who? Not only God, of course, that's most important. But how about God? He cares about those He's made in His image. And He cares about where these sins can lead. We care about this because of the who. Because if we're meant to grow together in the body of Christ especially, and we don't want to hurt in any way those that are made in His image and are being remade in His kingdom, in His image. How about the why? Because God cares about us as Christians and every believer, and He wants us to take this seriously because of where it can lead. And because of the fact that as we grow in knowing who He is and knowing His great love and His heart desire, He can take what can be the worst thing, what is the worst thing, taking physical life and what that commandment means on the surface, and He can turn us, as we understand this commandment, He can use it in a way where we are focused on one of the best things. And that's growing to love others in a positive way. And He cares about the why. He wants us to grow. Daniel Doriani tells about, he was a little kid, this pastor and commentator. He would be difficult, you know, and his mom would get frustrated and she'd say, "Well, wait till I get my hands on you. I'm going to wring your neck." W-R-I-N-G. And he said, well, at the age of 5, he could imagine his mom picking him up by his feet and swinging him like a bell, you know, wringing him. Didn't sound all that bad. Until one day, it was time to slaughter some chickens at Grandpa's farm, and he overheard the discussion. They were talking about whether they should use the axe or wring their neck. And it dawned on him. He realized there was a difference between R-I-N-G, ring, ringing a bell, and wringing his neck. And what he thought was the best actually turned out to be the worst. But the Lord seeks to take what is the worst in this commandment, and for us as Christians, by His grace, transform it into the best. Us growing in a love for Him and love for others, dealing with our hearts, growing to worship Him with our hearts and love Him, but growing to love others and see them from His perspective and have that right attitude more and more, where we want to do what's right and good. And by the gospel and His grace, He transforms self-centered individuals like you and me as Christ saves us and lives in us, so that we grow to think about others more and their emotions and their feelings, and to deal with things in a way that pleases the Lord. That's from His viewpoint. This is the amazing thing He does for us and through us. It doesn't happen overnight. No. Of course not. Is it easy all the time? No. Does it mean everybody's going to always like us? Does it mean you can make people forgive you? No. We make peace as much as we can on our part, but it means we grow to be discerning and we grow to deal with things in the way that pleases the Lord. I love Micah 6:8. God has shown you what He requires of you, to love justice and to do mercy and to walk humbly with your God. And He wants to help that grow in us. He will produce that in us as His people as we look to Him. So let's turn to Him now as we close.